Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that sound. This your play apartment, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that sound. Wiggling.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dallas, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday nights. West West, y'all.
What's the matter? I was up on the radar for about a good 3-4 years, bro. These niggas still kept in my face like they fought with me. But it don't matter, though.
They love me, they love me, they love me now, they love me, they love me, they love me, they love me now, they love me, they love me, they love me, they love me now, they love me, they love me, they love me, they love me now, they love me, they love me, they love me, they love me now, they love me, they love me, they love me, they love me now. Niggas used to be up in my face. It was trying to get it in, no time to wait. Niggas trying to get it drippin', they wanna pay. Had to learn it on my own, I had to be patient. Once I thought about a green, they were moving to credit. Niggas tell me that they rip, but these niggas be fake. But I saw you shoulda seen how they tried to play. Said I saw that paper, make sure my mind is long. Tell my brother, keep your head up, he bout to be home. My little sister graduated, she pushing her own. Tell my mama, she gon' make it, she gotta be strong. Uncle, you look at the baby, the one in the own. If it ain't about the chick, I won't answer the phone. Bless your order, but I'm having whatever you want. Send me your defense, I'm shipping it long. They love me, they love me, they love me now. They love me, they love me, they love me now. They love me, they love me, they love me now. They love me, they love me, they love me, they love me now. They love me, they love me, they love me now.
I don't really fit into it, don't get in the case. Cause I'm the trapping nigga, pull up, put you in your place. Don't be acting like you let me, you're feeling the face. I don't really give a fuck what you having to say. Bitch, I do it on my own, I'm making it shake. Live your life up to the pillars, don't live in the crate. You know I'm about the business, I try to be patient. Sitting low with these bitches, I'm getting this place. All these niggas that be switching, I couldn't be traded. If it wasn't by the chatting, but I see you later. You can tell when they love me. You can tell when they love me not. They why I'm always in the trenches, yeah, I'm not. Minding my business, I just saw these niggas that.
They love me now. They love me. They love me. They love me now. They love me. They love me. They love me now. They love me. They love me. They love me. They love me now.
They love me.
They love me now.
They love me.
love me.
They love me.
They love me now.
Yeah, 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 what it is, this your host of the night, King Eric, and you're now tuned in to a very exclusive episode of Off the Cuff Radio, sponsored by Buddy Boy Entertainment, sponsored by Da Vinci Clothing, sponsored by Core Financial, Jesse's Boutiques, and man, do we got a dope lineup tonight, man. We got a doubleheader lined up. This cat on the line right now is putting it down behind the scenes for a lot of the music that you hear in Atlanta. He's real trap heavy out there. Networking game is down pat. Got a new project in the works, and he's just getting started. And he's right here on Off the Cuff Radio. So without further ado, I want to bring on YDG, a.k.a. YDG Gonna Fix It. Let's go.
What's going on? What's going on? Appreciate you for having
brother,
me. Chilling, man.
What's
chilling.
Going
just
on,
left
my
the
man?
Studio.
How's everything out there?
It's all right, man. Work nonstop. Just left the studio. Probably gonna go back to the studio again in a couple of hours. Gotta make some beats tonight.
Definitely, man. And before we get things started, man, I'm gonna let people know that the call number is 516-531-9596. And in case you wanna chime in or show some love. So with that being said, man, hope everything is good with you tonight, bro. How you doing?
I'm all right, man. Taking it a day at a time. Just trying to stay consistent, keep the work flowing, good vibes.
So with everybody that's already in tune and they're tuning on to this show, man, tell them what you got going on for the fall coming up. Cause you know it's officially fall season and we going into the winter. We in the third, fourth quarter. Tell us what you got going on, man.
I got a couple of I got a lot of singles. I ain't gonna lie. I'm trying to decide if I'm gonna just make it an album, but I got a couple of big OGs in the area, you know, that's having me take my time, just drop singles and just do some videos and put some visuals out. So I'm working on visuals. I got more singles behind this one. I got a couple of artists I'm collabing with. I got some producers I'm collabing with on album material type. So, you know, I'm trying to put that work in there, get the interviews rolling, get some vlogging. You know, I'm trying to get traveling with it, get on some tours, make it happen. Make it happen for 2022.
Yeah, especially with things is slowly opening back up. But y'all been pretty much been wide open and moving out in there. Hey.
Yeah, it's like we supposed to be shut down, but, you know, somehow you're going to make it work whether you can't be outside, you know. So, yeah, you got the virtual, but we got some people still be hands-on that just ease their way here. Might just quarantine there for a couple of days before they go back, like, you know. But other than that, yeah, that's what we're going on.
Yeah, because a lot of people, everybody's looking at Atlanta like the new Hollywood now, man, because everybody else, for the most part, been closed up. So they looking at y'all like, man, this is where the fun is at. This is where cats got to get that bag at. Y'all pretty much the mecca.
You're right. You're right. And a lot of people don't move down here. Like, a lot of people has moved to Atlanta. Our population don't went up. It's ridiculous.
And not to mention, man, I mean, a lot of things is happening out there. Like, I see a lot of rappers buying land out there. It's like ATL was like, as Fat Joe would say, the price range went up out there. You know what I mean?
Facts. Hopefully everybody do the right thing. You know, like, you got some people they don't take control of the motive of what you're supposed to do with what you're getting yourself into. You buying land, you really supposed to have a purpose for this land. But you gonna build a city on this land. I know me, I'm gonna try to build my own little city. I ain't gonna cap you down. I mean, I'm gonna have a couple of studios, It's going to be a couple of little retails. We're going to have a whole community on the other side of the land. Like, I'm trying to put it together, you know, but I just be hoping everybody be on the good road, and they stick to the good role of the purpose. And some people, they miss that. Like, I know a couple of people down here that don't bought land, and they don't, there's nothing going on, but it's just sitting. I'm like, we getting old. You know, we got to do something with it. We got a younger generation to, you know, got to give them something to lean back on when they get old.
Exactly. And talking about with Atlanta being the place of black-owned entrepreneurship, tell us about growing up in Atlanta and doing your era, and what was that like?
Growing up in my era, right, like, you know, when I say I got interested in the music, I was young. I was a baby young. I was like 3, 4, 5, 6 young. So, you know, Freaknik was going on around that time. You know, some of the old projects were still up. You know, like the streets, the game, it wasn't like it is today. You know, it was a little more smoother, you know. And so it was I can't lie and say I don't miss the old school vibes, because it was more cooler, calmer than what it is now. Now everything is kind of nonchalant. Uppity, oh, you got to be this, oh, you got to be that. It's too much. It's like it's adding more to the create. I feel like the society ain't nothing but a creation. So all this that's going on now is nothing but, it's just adding to the society. It's adding to the creation and causing what it's causing. But, you know, for each his own.
You know, it's wild that you mentioned that, because it's like, from people, because I have family out there in Atlanta as well, and they tell me it's like two different worlds. Like, from the 90s, when you had the Goody Mob, and you had So-So Def and Outkast and all those guys, they was blown
right
up, to like the 2000s where BMF came through. They changed
right
the whole landscape.
Facts. And now, It's out of the young generation. Right now it's the young generation wave. Like Lil Baby, ready, what his name? Rollo Rodriguez, himself, like, it's the younger generation lead now. That's the way it's going on. Like, I commend the generation, but it's still a little sloppy, because I feel like, as I said, I like how the old school used to move. It was a little more calmer, a little more organized, all that good stuff. You know what I mean? Now, these days, it don't take much, but it do take much. So it causes confusion, because some might not know what it takes. Some do know what it takes, but it still might not work. You know what I mean? It causes a lot of confusion, because it's just so much now. But as far as the lifestyle, you know, you got the regular lifestyle when you're a regular civilian. You know, you got your 9-to-5, or you just, you know, in the house, at the house, trap, whatever. And then you got the industry lifestyle. Now, the industry lifestyle got its own categories in Atlanta, because it's like you got those who don't rap, but they around all the rappers. And These are the ones that kind of popping in the streets. Like, everybody in the street, you know, these folks here. So, you know, yeah, man, you know, yeah, that was going on. And you got the side that want to not be a part of it, because, you know, they don't move like that. The lifestyle in the industry now, everything going on at nighttime, man. We out at nighttime. Like old school, they say the freaks come out at night. Oh, yeah, that was going on. Niggas don't book studio time until.
It seems like now Atlanta is the place that don't sleep. It used to be New York City. Now it's Atlanta.
Right. You know what I mean? It's crazy. And it's like it's all the recycled because you gonna like I can say the next generation, you bound to see something familiar from the previous generation or decades ago. But it's up to people like me, you, the fabulous DJs, the fabulous A&Rs and the CEOs to, you know, make that recycle go around the right way.
Major facts there, man. Now, going back into your music, like, style-wise, like, who were your inspirations to make you be like, okay, this guy's a motivation for me to want to craft my own style?
I can say the boy Jazzy Fizzle, I used to listen to a lot of his beats. I used to listen to a lot of Bone Thugs and Harmony when I was growing up. Like, I was 2 years old when, like, you know the little toy. Are you familiar with the little toys our parents used to buy? You pull the stick and the little thing in the middle, they spin around and, you know, they make a little noise.
Yeah.
So they select something and they play something. All right. I had that. I had a little tape recorder and I had a little boombox speaker. I might have put some Bone Thugs and Harmony in the boombox speaker and pre-play. I hit record on a tape recorder and I pulled a little stick and started like I'm DJing or something.
Oh.
And it's like, I'm like, it's crazy because when my uncle tell me this story, I really did that for real. Because my mama said it, I couldn't believe it. But then my uncle hit me with it, I'm like, wow. So it was in me. It was in me, not on me.
That's what it is, man. Right. And you probably the first cat to mention Jazzy Faye. Jazzy Faye used to put down some hits back in that time, man.
That's what I'm trying to say, man. Jazzy Faye put some real hits down. Like, I ain't gonna lie, I was a big fan of Aaliyah. Like, I used to like the music that she, like, put together. I felt like she was too fat. Like, she was too fat. And I used to always think about her and more of Jazzy Faye beats together. I felt like there was some exclusive, you know. So that kind of led me to wanting to produce. I got interested in producing. So second grade, third grade, I joined the band, started playing all the instruments. My main instrument was the alto saxophone, but I played all of them, baritone, clarinet, flute, piccolo, drums. I used to have a couple of haters when I was in middle school because I was able to leave class early and work, and I can leave class early and go to the band room, and I can be the assistant band director because I was his favorite student, right? Because I was interested in music. So I learned how to read and write music. And up until ninth grade is when I started making beats, producing my own beats. And my little sister was four. She was 4 years old when I let her make my beat tag. I said, my brother made this track. You hear that on all my beats? That's my little sister. She 18 now. That's who I'm talking about in one person. I said, my little sister graduated. She pushing her own. That's actually who chose this song. She said this song was the one. So that's why I ran with it.
That's dope, man. And what's the story behind your stage name? I usually like asking people that question because that stage name gives the people a glimpse look on who the artist really is.
The true story behind my name, Why Did You Don't Fix It, is I was in me, Pee Wee Longway, Thugger, Rich the Kid, Jose Guapo. We was in the studio one night. And there was an engineer. It was an engineer there before I pulled up. He was an engineer, but I guess Longway felt like he didn't know his sound or he wasn't doing something right. So, you know, he called me like, why did you, I need you, pull up. As soon as I walked in the door, he's, hey, they go, hey, why did you fix that? Man, I don't know what he got going on, man. He tripped me in the door now. He can be out your way. Like, I just bust out laughing. Then you hear Pee Wee say, yep, why did you gonna fix it? He started saying it on the song. And all of a sudden, it was glued. I started receiving clients, like, they called me to mix their songs. So the name pretty much came off of the talent of me being an engineer. I can turn dirt to gold. Bless you.
Now, letting people know, man, like, what is the duties of an engineer? Because a lot of people don't really ask a lot of questions about the duties of what an engineer. They know about the beat maker. They know about the DJ. And so to say, producer.
It's funny that you asked me that question. All right, so I'm going to start out by saying an engineer and a producer is two different things. A producer is considered a composer, like an artist is considered a composer slash writer. An engineer don't write or compose. An engineer mixes and masters. An engineer helps create that sound to the best of its ability, which an engineer records, mix and master, audio editing. That's the difference between the engineer and the producer. But that's the duties of the engineer. So when the artist booked me, like, I get booked for engineering. That's what I do. That, like I told you, that's where I got my name from. So my job is to, this four-hour block, I got to record this artist. He might pay me to mix his song. All right, so it's my duty to make sure this song is recorded with quality. I also supposed to make sure that he's not recording no crap. You know what I mean? I can't just take his money and just record anything. I could, but that's not making real music. When you got the love for music, it's not about taking his $250 for 4 hours. You know what I mean? When you
right.
got the love for music as an engineer, you gonna help him pipe that song up as an engineer. Hey, bro, I think you should say that like this, or I think you should put a little more feeling in it. Hold up, come out here, check this out, what I did to you real quick. That's what an engineer's job is. Not just hitting the button, recording, and that's it. That's not the job. A lot of people get it twisted, and I ain't even go to school for this. I taught myself how to engineer. You know what I mean? I taught myself how to engineer, and I taught myself how to produce. But the reason I figured that was the key to engineering, because that's the only way quality music comes out, if that job is done by an engineer. A producer can't do that job. He can only make a beat. Unless he's multi-talented like myself, a producer can only make a beat. A producer probably can rap too. Yeah, he probably can hit the record button and record.
Right.
As far as having the personality of an engineer, where you got to help build this song, not just expect the artist to do it by itself and you just hit a button. It's a difference. Engineers got a big job. That's who makes the song. Producer got to have a good beat. The artist got to come with that crack so the engineer can put that shit together, make it sound like it sounds. Excuse my language.
And not to mention, that's also the dirty work, so to speak. Cause you got to clean up that sound and you got to add that. Cause you know it got to sound sonically crisp to where it could just transition
right.
into different eras. Just like that's like a lot of those albums from the '90s, like
right.
for example, Mobb Deep's Infamous or Dr.
Mm-hmm.
Dre's 2001
mm-hmm.
albums like that, they still sound fresh. Oh, I gotta tell you, All Eyes on Me, that came out in '96.
Yeah, right. Yep. That's like my song, the song you just played. You know, I engineered that. I mixed it on my own. It's not even mastered. I just gave it a quality mix, which I got it being mastered now. So I can go ahead and repress it. But, you know,
Now, when
you gotta put your, Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Now, when you you good. Now, when you working with somebody, like, do you prefer people to just mail you the vocals, or do you prefer to be in the studio with that person?
I would say I'm a hands-on person. That's just like on the producer side. I don't even like when artists hit me with, send me something to me, email. Nah, bro, I like to cook. I like to cook it up in your face. You know what I mean? I want to feel where you came from. You know what I mean? As the artist, I want to, as the producer, I want to feel where the artist coming from. So as the engineer, when it comes down to mixing songs and all that, I really prefer to be in the studio with you. But if the time is consuming and, you know, we got two different time zones or whatever the situation might be, then I understand mailing it to me, emailing it to me. But I feel like the best work comes out of vibing together, because you might have some you hear that I didn't hear. As an engineer, yeah, we supposed to think about a lot, but we might miss some. We might not hear something that you heard, you know, because we listen to it in a different level. I can't say that about engineers. Engineers do hear music differently than artists. And that's something that an artist got to understand. Because when it comes down to it, when you're trusting an engineer to build something, they're stepping out of the box. Why I say stepping out of the box is because you're trusting the engineer with to pretty much build a song. He editing a song that you already had mapped out. And so when this engineer finished, it's not going to sound like how you had it mapped out, but it might sound better. You know what I mean? So it be, I feel like it's a vibe thing when it comes down to it. I feel like the vibe would be better if you together when you're working on it. We in the studio together, because you'll be able to interact with that track and make that goal.
Especially when you got deadlines too, because them deadlines that a lot of these guys be having, they be a bitch, man. And then they'll sing you the wrong song and the vocals. And sometimes the vocals be bad stuff, and you
man.
Wait for the cat to send it to you, and then now you gotta clean that up.
Yeah, man, I ain't gonna lie. As the engineer, I'm gonna tell you what. This what it aggravates me. Like, they might book me to mix a song. All right, so you know, I record, engineer, mix, master on Pro Tools. So they know this. But when they send me the files, you know, I already sent you money and everything. When you send me the files, you sent me some FL Studio files or new Window files or Logic. I'm like, man. So, it caused more work on the engineer. Because now I got to convert the files you sent me to the files I need to upload to mix or so.
Hold on, one second, brother. I got my co-host T-Max for the facts on live now. Man, we got the talented YDG in the building, man. He's giving us game about engineering and how these niggas can't send these fucked up tracks, man.
What's going on, man? How you? Good?
What's going on, OG?
What's going on with you? Yeah, I was listening in. I was a little late coming in. My apologies. Yeah, man, and one thing about it, like you said, YG, you know, it's something that people have to understand in terms of it. You want quality products when you are producing, you know. And that is something I think some artists don't understand in terms of, you know, like we've talked on this show so many times, the music that you have is your job interview to the public in terms of it, whether it's the video or it's going to be the audio. Now, for those that don't necessarily understand the nuance between mixing and mastering, and then in terms of putting it all together, what are the nuances of it in terms of actually mixing it all together in terms of the effects, and then the mastering process in terms of making sure you have the final copy that is going to be presented on an album?
Ooh. Okay. Yep. I'm sorry. Run. Okay, so your exact question. Can you run that by me again? I was trying to practice.
Sure. No, it's okay. Now, in terms of like the mixing and mastering process, in terms of mixing it where you have all the sound effects that you're going to have for the album, then the mastering process of when it is actually going to be presented for the album, format. What are the main differences that people, that the consumers, the listeners have, and then the artists have to understand in terms of that distinct difference?
Okay, so the mixing process, mixing a song is more sort of like for your car, for your email, for your SoundClouds, or just to make a video on Facebook or whatever the case might be. Yeah, the DJ, it's a rough. Mixing is pretty much always the final rough draft. You know what I mean?
Got it.
When it gets to mastering, that's when you're bothering the peak. You gotta edit the peakage. You gotta tweak the frequencies, and you're getting it ready for like the airwaves, the radio itself. If you listen to a song playing on the radio versus a song playing on iTunes, it sounds totally, completely different.
Exactly, and that's why I wanted to ask you that in terms of what you said about the video versions, how some video versions may sound different than the album version in terms of the melodies or, like you said, the equalizers, i.e. EQs and all that. So that's the difference. So that's why in terms of it. Okay, thank you. Because I've always wondered
about
that.
An album gets mastered. Like a mixtape just get mixed.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? An album comes with, like, master files. A mastered mm-hmm. track comes with the official master copy, the acapella copy, the instrumental, and what, that's what the DJ pool to, when the DJs take the vocals, they might mix it on another beat and all that type for the tempo and club purposes. And, that's the master side. You ain't doing that on the mixing side. The mixing side, you just adding drops, you cleaning up the vocals, you taking the backgrounds out, you putting the ad-libs on walkie-talkie, you playing with the plugins, you might change the beat, put the beat drops in, make the beat do this, make the beat do that. That's where mixing. Mastering is when you finish that final sound and we start performing in like stadiums and overseas and on TV itself. Like when you got to perform and it's getting aired on BET and all that. That sound, when you hear that song, that's master. That's not a mix song. That's a master song. When you hear this on YouTube, it just uploaded on YouTube, but it don't have the official copyright and the publishing and all that. That's just me. It's not mastered. You'll know if it's not mastered.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess what would be a great example of it is when you listen to Griselda's Cruiserweight Coat in terms of the video version, how it is mastered, well, how it's mixed in terms of the effect, because they splice it in with the videos in terms of, like, you have the spoken word clip. And then when you actually listen to the album, some of those, sound effects in the song, great-ass album, by the way, what would Sheen do? But when you listen to the album version, it is totally different in terms of those effects are not in it like it is in a video version. Gotcha. When you look at such particular, and this is also when you say this, YG, when you're talking about the master version, this is what would be considered master recording in terms of the original copies that are so pertinent in terms of your publishing and everything. Was that correct?
You can put it that way. Let's say once everything is published, once everything is registered and that's when the mastering process comes. Master it once you know you finna have a slot on the radio, once you know you finna be aired on any type of major broadcasting or whatever like that, that's when the song is getting mastered. If it's in the, like, there's, it's levels to it, because you got indie, you got semi, I feel like you got indie, you got semi-major, then you got major. You know, semi-major is kind of the internet to me, because the fact you won't gain more fans until you actually hit the radio. Once the radio station bring the fans in, you'll see everything going up. So while it's playing in the clubs, it's not mastered. Mm-hmm. They just recorded it probably like 2 weeks ago, got it mixed good, and it sound great in the club speakers. It sound great in the car. But once it's mastered, it has mm-hmm. You'll hear the clean version more. You'll hear the vocals on a whole nother beat on the radio with a popular DJ in the city mixing from 9 to 12 or 9 to 11, whatever time it may be, you know, the turn up hours. Gotcha. And you'll hear the clarity. The quality mm-hmm. itself is different.
Now, obviously, you know, you speak with such knowledge about this in terms of being a professional. When you first started in this, I guess the thing is, how did you really get into it in terms of really learning all of this science and, you know, just, you know, who did you learn from to accumulate all this wisdom and audio capacity in terms of making sure, you know, everything does sound like it's supposed to?
All my life, I was just explaining this, bro. I really didn't, like, nobody didn't teach me. I was just dedicated. Like, when I was in a band, as I learned how to read and write music, after I decided to join, I decided on my own to join a band. So after I learned how to read and write music, I didn't go outside around with my friends or my cousins or my brothers who I went to school with. I stayed in the house. I had speakers. So I put my computer up to the speakers. I'm blasting beats I'm making. I'm blasting songs I'm recording. And, like, I'm learning. I'm teaching myself how to mix them. I'm playing with all the plugins, trying to see what this plugin is going to do to my vocals, or trying to see what this plugin is going to do to my melody when I'm making a beat. I'm playing with all of it. So I'm teaching myself. I'm learning at the same time. And what I do, I'll go outside and listen to what's playing outside, what's in the streets playing. So I'll turn the radio on, listen to the radio. Or I go to, then it was MySpace. I don't think YouTube was out there. It was MySpace and SoundClick.
Yeah.
I go on SoundClick, MySpace, and listen, you know what I mean? I go listen to them, and then I go back to the radio. I go in the gas station and buy one of them CDs that they got sent right there when you go to the register. Buy one of them just to see what the quality sound like. And then I go back in the house. I go back to Crane, make a beat, start recording the song. I get back to teaching myself how to mix, start playing with this. Okay, let me try this equalizer. Let me try this dynamic compressor. Let me try this flanger or phaser or reverb. I taught myself how to do it. I even tried to go to AIU, but I didn't even last a full week. Due to the fact I wasn't learning nothing. Everything that they was teaching, I already knew it. And then it got to the point, because at the time when I started trying to go to AIU, I had just hopped off the course with Pee Wee Longway and Young Thug. So I gained the name. Yeah, it's like that was the wrong time to do that. I gained the name already and tried to go to school for what I was. I'm like, that was a bad idea, because everybody asking me how you do this, how you do that, how you do this. I'm like, dang, I came to school to learn. But it's like, I got to be the teacher. So I feel bad.
But that's the thing, though, because, you know, look, you work with Young Thug and Pee Wee Longway, and I'm a big fan. I'm going to tell you, though, I became a fan of Pee Wee Longway when I heard him spit that verse on Q Money's Neat remix. Oh, my God. I was like, whoa. Because I never really listened to Pee Wee before that, and I was like, this dude is serious.
Yeah, I mean, but it's like, but the thing is, you have such an innate understanding of being self-taught that it's like, to a degree, schooling would have ruined it because you already had your instincts in terms of how you developed it. You know, once you've developed
right.
that, it's something of your own merit. And I'm not downing this in terms
and
of education
like,
in any capacity. Yeah, go ahead.
I would say you're right. You're absolutely right. But it's like, I wouldn't say it would have changed or like how I can't say that it would have added development to my knowledge, but it's like the knowledge that I gained off of being self-taught with engineering and
mm-hmm.
producing, I move fast. It allows me to move
right.
fast. So the way the school gonna teach you, they gonna teach you how to do it like this, like that, like that. It's like what I do it quicker than that. I can do this by doing this, and you be like, dang, how you just do that? I had to go through all this and this and that. I'm like, shit, I just did this. There you go. So like, hey, where you learn that from?
Yeah.
What school you went to? I ain't go to school, bro. I just taught myself how to do it. Yeah.
And you already had accelerated process.
You
got to
be the best teacher.
Yeah.
You can say that. But the most part, you got to be dedicated. And that's where you got to be determined. You got to make sure you're determined to want to know how to do that. And that's kind of where YDG comes from. Young, determined.
Man, that's inspirational. I mean, so in terms of it, like, tell us how you got that place in with Young Thug and Pee Wee. How did that come about?
One day I got out of school. I was going to Theroux High School, DM Theroux High School. I was living off Camilton in some apartments called Bent Creek. I came home from school and I started picking up beats. So I'm making a beat. I did drop the bass line. Boom, boom, boom. So a friend, somebody I met, he named Bone B's Presidential Music. He was walking up the hill. This was my first time meeting him. He was walking up the hill. He was passing by my apartment. He backed up after he passed the door. He came and knocked on the door. So I answered the door. He like, bro, that's you? I'm like, yeah, I just made it. I just got here. He's like, bro. He like, my name Bone B. I'm like, why did you, such a with me? He like, what you got going on later on? I'm like, shit, making beats. He asked me, did I want to go with him to the studio? I said, cool. I'm with it. Well, we're going to make some beats. I ain't had no money to pay for no session or nothing like that. He like, nah, bro, you good. I just want you to come with me. So I went with him. We pull up on Pee Wee Longway. We over there off of Silver Road. So I walk in, you got Pee Wee, you got MPA Duke, well, he YSL Duke, but you got Duke, Pee Wee, you got Wicked, Turk, Spud, Quavo had them pulled up, Cash I had them pulled up, Thug had them pulled up. So, you know, you like, what you do? Pee Wee asked me, what you do? I'm like, I made beats, produce, you know, engineer a little bit. I said, I'm working as an engineer. At the time, and I didn't feel like I had the sound for engineering yet. I didn't feel like I was fat engineering yet. I just knew how to record. I was still trying to teach
right.
myself how to mix. I didn't feel like I was
right.
fat with the mixing. Until Pee Wee called, like, after that day, I played some beats or whatever. So I ended up leaving, went to school, because I had to go to school. I was still in school. I ended up leaving. I transferred. I tried to go to Washington High School. I tried to transfer to Washington High School, and they ended up sending me to CRIM. Got kicked out of CRIM, and I ended up going to job program. I graduated, though. I did graduate high school. So one night, he called me at 3 in the morning. Hey, why did you wake up? I need a producer engineer, man. I need you. I said, all right, I'm at the house. I'm like, shit, I'm ready. Cool. So he sent Rich Homie Quan and Wicked to come pick me up. So they picked
mm-hmm.
me up. We go to the studio. And you got the same folks there. You got Thug, you got Pee Wee, you got Squirt, you got Jose Guapo this time. Quavo and Takeout pulled up just to get some little reef or whatever. So he say play some beats.
I played a James Bond beat. That was the first beat I played.
Okay.
He said, man, that hard. He said, pull that up. So I had to hook his studio up first because he got mad at Bone Beezy, the dude who introduced me to him.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, Bone Beezy was too low with engineer. I didn't know that until after I became the engineer. So I put the studio together. We get in there. We record. Days not my bar. And the session, you know, the session led on about 4 in the morning. So I left. I had to go to school. Buddy called me in school. Where you at? I need you to pull up on the
phone.
I'm like, okay. I pull up after school at 3 o'clock. He said, look, he showed me a video. It was like 4 or 5 days after we recorded the James Bond song. He showed me the video. It's on WorldStar going up. I'm like, whoa. He like, yeah. He like, welcome. He like, you my producer. And ever since then, we locked in. I'm like, so I started pulling up, recording more songs. Quavo started pulling up, doing hooks and recording shit. And it just went from there.
And once you started that networking, that's dope, man. Like he said, dope. So once you got your foot in the door, and that's a hell of a way to come in. I mean, you just happen to come to the studio. You see the Migos, all of them, Pee Wee and all of them just in a regular studio session. I mean, shit like that just don't happen like that. But, you know, especially for a beginner coming in, you know, at the time.
Right.
And you are like right in the mix of Atlanta hip-hop royalty right there. So we get to the process of you connecting with all these people. So what is it like when you're actually beginning to get those calls to work for everybody else and then, your name getting out there and then just, like, the whole business aspect as well as the music? What is that like once when did you realize that you were becoming, like, a big name out there?
I don't lie. I used to get irritated because I didn't understand. I'm like, my phone won't stop ringing. But then I started to understand the business. Like, I had to learn the business. So I started to understand the business. And I'm like, okay, now I see why all the calls coming through. So when I get booked for, like, studio time or a feature or to mix a song or whatever it might be, and they go to talking about Pee Wee or Thug or how you do this, how you do that. I'm like, you just got to be yourself, bro. Like, you don't do too much. Like, as an engineer, or a producer, don't do too much to try to make him like your beats, or don't do too much to try to make him like you. Have your own personality. You got to stay yourself and just stay consistent. Like, be silent with yourself and your craft. You don't want to overdo it. Cause people really get scared of it. They don't know how to take it. Sometimes people don't know how to take it. It came from nothing. You know what I mean? So you can't really act like you came from. You can't really act like you came from nothing. Okay, it'll show the thirst in you. And so it was just crazy because here I am, a regular person. Now I'm in the studio every day with all these major artists that I would just listen to every day on the radio. It's like, I didn't get groupied out or, cause shit, I started seeing them every day, so I ain't got no reason to get groupied out. I feel too much. People start asking me, why you don't take no pictures? Why you don't post no pictures on Instagram or Facebook? I'm like, I'm with them every day. But that was the irritating part because I didn't know the business. I didn't know that all that is like, that's gallery.
Part of your brand.
That's a gallery. They go to the documentary, I ain't know that. But now I know, so that's how that go.
Well, one thing about it, though, is that you got the personality for this, listening to you. It's King and myself here. You're so grounded. You're so rooted in your work ethic. A good friend of ours, the Mix King, Steve Sola, out of New York, a very good friend of ours, talked in a similar way about the process. He worked with Mobb Deep, and a lot of QB artists. And, when we had him on, he was talking about the process of just
you know, working with these guys and a lot of times developing friendships with them, because once you really have a chemistry with the artist, you begin to have an ear for what they want, and that's how the it just becomes more easier to facilitate, you know, great products.
Right.
You know, but definitely in terms of, you know, like you said, but, you know, in terms of the pictures, you know, a lot of people, you know, would think that you'll be trying to, you know, use them as photo ops, but it's like, you know, to hear you talk, this is a job to you. It's like, yo, I came to work. That's what this is. But,
right.
But as you've learned in the game, too, those pictures are also your part of your branding as well. And not from a business perspective, but it shows that these individuals have had faith in you and they co-signed you, that they have confidence in you, that not only are you going to work on their product, but you're going to bring fire. And
right.
That type of publicity, money can't buy, you know, when you're co-signed, you know, by people that are really, you know, popular in the industry. When you look, pretty much in terms of your inspiration in terms of beat making, when you look at guys like, you know, Lex Luger, Southside, so many other Southern artists, of course, Shorty Red. Who else are some of the influences that you may have, East, West, Down South, because of who really inspire you?
I would say now that you mention that as far as inspiration, my favorite producer out of that bunch, I know I said Jazzy Faye, but my favorite producer ever was Vibe. You heard of producer Vibe? I think there was a group called Vibe Beats. V-Y-B-E.
V-Y-B-E. Who was
yep,
what was some of their
Vibe.
Credits? What was some of their credits?
It was a lot of people used to use their beats. They was YouTube producers. A lot of people used to download and record on their beats. If I'm mistaken, Travis Porter is one of them.
Okay.
I think they made the, I forgot who produced it. Yeah, Travis Porter is one of them. But, like, they used to be my favorite producers. I used to love just getting on YouTube, listening to their beats. And it's like, that's when I came up with my tag. And I heard they said, Vibe. I'm like, okay. I ended up coming up with my tag. My brother made a good track.
Yeah. And in terms of it, how do you feel from where, you know, you are, how do you feel from where you see the game today in terms of music, in terms of production, from even 5 years ago to how it is today? Do you find it similar? Do you find it different? Do you see the process changing in any regard? What's your observation?
Well, I can say it has changed a little bit. I look at things a little different now. Like, it's more of a bigger picture to me now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't make, like, it's easy to make beat. It's easy to make a beat in 7 minutes or 8 minutes. That's nothing.
It's
right.
Different.
Like, it's easy to do that, but now I don't spend 8 minutes on a beat, or I spend at least 30 minutes on a beat, or if I'm going to create that melody. Like, you know, it's a critique thing. You critique yourself. Like, I listen to a bunch of my old stuff, and I'd be like, it's hot, but I know how much better I am now and what I can do. So some people ask me to why not redo my old stuff? I'm like, it's so much, like, then I didn't make music the way I make it now. Then there wasn't too much thought into it. Then there wasn't too much thought into it. How I want this to sound, or how I want that to sound, or how I want this to drop, or how I want that to drop. And it was more so of, oh man, it's gonna be hard. The streets gonna eat this up. It wasn't a bigger picture then. Now it's a bigger picture, so we ain't gonna just put anything down.
Right.
We're going to make sure it sound right. We're going to make sure it hit right. All that good stuff. You know what I mean?
It's called evolution. You know, and it's funny because when you said about how when you listen to some of your old stuff, how, you know, you think about, you know, well, I'm so much better than this now in terms of what I started. It's like it kind of is reminiscent, you know, of Dre in a sense, because Dre says, you know, once he listens to something, once he drops, once the album drops, he doesn't listen to it anymore. It's like, once
right.
he's like, unless he just happens to hear it, you know, it's, he doesn't listen to it anymore once the album comes out. He's like, I'm done with it. He's like, Dre said pretty much at one time, he doesn't like really listen to his old stuff. You know,
right. And see, what I learned, and see now, what I learned about that, with that particular situation, I
mm-hmm.
can't wait to listen to my old stuff, especially if it's uploaded, if it's released.
Right.
Because once you drop something hot now, everybody's
mm-hmm.
going to go back and listen to your old stuff. Like, now
yeah.
your old stuff is going to be searched. So now they want to see what you, you know, they want to see what you would come at then. And that I feel like, you know, it kind of helps show your diversity.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
But that's and, always a great reference point. Yeah. Go ahead, King. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, now, producers, you know, there's producers battling the debate is already going within hip-hop right now, especially with this whole thing going on with the name to be a Puff Daddy. Like that. Now, you being behind the boards, would you consider Puff Daddy to be a producer?
Okay, if we can, okay, I would say technically, no, because he's not sitting there, he's not pushing the buttons.
Right,
but,
he doesn't play instruments, right.
But co-production, yeah, you're giving a lot of inputs on production.
Right.
You're giving a lot of ideas, you're issuing a lot of ideas. You issue in a lot of details. You break down the details. You know what I mean? If he's literally in the studio with a producer and he's inputting melodies, hey, I think you should do this. Dun, 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 dun. If he's doing that, then cool. Yeah, that's co-production. I wouldn't say he's producing, though. I personally feel like they only say he's producing because he's rich.
But, yeah, but you know something, man. But what you said is real. You know, and my bro, you know, King and me, we always talk about this in terms of, you know, Puffy has been very successful in terms of, you know, the music industry. You know, he's one of the moguls, no two ways about it. Even if there are
right.
some questionable issues in terms of business practices, we can say that on the air because they've been documented. So it's not like we're slandering
right.
the man. There has always been stuff out there about him that hasn't always been positive. But one thing we can say
right.
is the man does have an ear for hooks and melody. There's always been the issue, I think, with a lot of hardcore hip-hop heads, though, like what you were saying,
right.
You know, because Puffy doesn't play instruments. You know, he doesn't, you know, like you said, he's not building the beat from scratch. So, like you said, put inputs on it, this, that, and the other. You know, when you look
mm-hmm.
at a situation with Jermaine Dupri, who is, you know, one of
building
the,
beats from scratch. You know, Jermaine
yeah,
built them
and
beats
he,
for real.
yeah, he, you know, and
that's
the thing
the producer.
Is, Jermaine, yeah, and Jermaine, he is a producer. You know, to a degree, he's one of the more underrated. You know, is he on a Dre
right.
or a Premier level? To me, not necessarily in terms of overall, but in terms of what he has done in terms of bringing hot music to the airwaves, I mean, you cannot deny what Jermaine... This is some trivia that people may not know. For those that don't know, in terms of Chris Cross's 1992 album, Totally Crossed Out, Jermaine Dupri holds the Guinness Book of World Records for youngest producer ever at 17 years old to have a platinum album.
That's real. And they don't give him his flowers for that. That's real.
Yeah.
I wonder
and
why
I think
about
he goes for gold.
I wonder why is that? Because it seems like they always trying to, like, little brother Jermaine Dupri when it comes to holding him to a certain regard next to Dre, next to Pharrell, next to a lot of the guys that came out around that time. But he got some, mm-hmm. he got some heat out there.
I think y'all, when it comes to Jermaine, and this is, and I preface this by saying this is not to minimize or disrespect anything he's done. Jermaine has always really been known as being a pop producer in terms of a lot of music that will be party and pop music. Where you look at guys like Dre, when you look at guys like Premier, when you look at guys like even Puffy, who has such an amalgam of different styles from R&B to hardcore hip hop. You know, when you look at Puff with Bad Boy, he had Big and Craig Mack. When you look at Dre, I mean, he had a Chronic, he had Doggy Style, you know. When you look at Premier, you know, Gangstar, you know, M.O.P., you know, these guys had music that crossed a broad spectrum of, you know, a demographic. And Jermaine has kind of always been known as being kind of just, you know, he's good, but it's like his music is just for the party crowd. But when it really, you know, he's never really had that cutthroat, like, in-your-face, boom-bap, like, oh-shit type thing that, really, I think it set it off. And I think sometimes there's been perceptions about his attitude, you know. He has said some things that were, fuck it, I'm going to say it, arrogant. You know, he said, I think, I saw something he saw I read in the XXL magazine some years ago. He said, because he was talking about how people were trying to malign him for his lack of real lyrics, and he said if he really dedicated himself to the writing, he would be somewhere in that Nas and Jay-Z range in terms of composition. I'm like, no, Jay-Z, you're not nowhere near those guys. I'm like, great at music, and, you know, you are great at what you do with that, but you are not
you
nowhere near
some good with that, writing though. That's the first time I heard that quote.
Yeah,
he bugging. I want what he's smoking on.
I'm telling you.
But he's great at what he does, and that's not to minimize him. I mean, when he. And I think one thing about it, when we look at the verses, with everything that's been going on with it, y'all, I know for you, YDG, this would especially be pertinent for you, especially for being a producer. You do mixer, engineer, everything, because you do it all. I think it's great musical history, just like what we saw with Ja Rule and Fat Joe, what we saw with The Lox and Dipset, what we saw with Snoop and DMX, rest in peace, what we saw with Escape and SWV and so many others. This gives the younger generation an understanding of the musical gems that these legends gave us. And I think verses as well, you know, this is about education as well for the youngest to really understand, like, you know, and as we get older, we sometimes look at the youth in terms of not sometimes appreciating King and myself were older, you know, our elements of hip hop. But then also, too, we got to understand, they weren't born during that time, so it's not going to have the same resonation for them because they weren't allowed to really understand that era. Does it make their music bad today? No, because they're simply rhyming from what their perspective is at the time. I do have an issue when the youngins, some of them, not all, but some of them really, really hold tradition tightly and do it proud. I do have an issue when some of them try to add light. They're better than the ones that came before them. And I'm like, no, because these are the individuals that lay the foundation for what you are today. And
right.
You didn't give them their respect.
Right. And, you know, I had an issue too. Cause I'd be like,
mm-hmm.
How do you feel like you was at? Where you think you got the idea to make music from? Like,
right.
You can't compare yourself to where you came from. You came from them.
That's
so
hard.
You can never feel like you better than them, because if it wasn't for them, you wouldn't be here. I look at it like that, because it's hip-hop.
If it wasn't no hip hop, then how would you be a artist today?
Mm.
Would you be playing a guitar? Would you be singing pop music? Would you be in the chorus class, or would you be making gospel music? How would you be a hip hop artist today if you felt like what you are doing now is better than then? You know, I got an old school spirit. You know, I just stay in my lane, man. Okay, it's like some of the young cats, you can't really tell them that. That way I don't say I limit my clients, but I try to limit my personal levels with my clients. You can't get on the personal level with everybody. Like, you can't be cool with all your clients, because everybody don't understand.
Man, you gotta keep this thing business, even when it seems like you in the studio with a lot of these guys. You're like, oh, I'm in the studio with this guy. This guy's a legend.
Right.
You know, have the soundtrack to my childhood. At the end of the day, this is business, dude. Like, when it comes to that paperwork,
right,
ain't
they
no
like,
fan
here. Believe it or not, they just like, believe it or not. Okay, when I just started this interview, I was at a studio. You know, studios being trap spots too now. So I was just at the studio.
Keep it real. Yeah,
you're right. I told this man, I'm going to say at least an hour before 9 o'clock, that I got a 9 o'clock interview. I got to be there. So, you know, I got there at least 3 hours before 9. So I'm like, anything you want to do, make a beat, you want to record a song, you want me to do a verse hop on something, do it now before 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
When I kid you not, this man just got mad. And I ain't care. You see, I kept talking to you. He got the ride. I went on ahead and got him right. Directing up. Yeah. Business is business. Yeah, you my brother. You my brother slash my artist. But you got to understand the business. It's just like, if you tell me I got a radio interview, bro, I got to be, all right, I'm cutting everything off at that specific time you told. Okay, that's important. You know what I mean? And I support you. It shows support. That's a business part of a relationship, of a personal relationship. If I can't respect that you got a radio interview at 9, that means I don't respect the business side. So, you know, he'll be calling me in the morning, though. I ain't tripping.
what'd he say? He'll get over it.
Yeah, he'll get over it. At the end of the day, he was right there when I got the name YDG on Fitz. And he came to me, hey, I want to rap. I don't want to trap no more. I want you to help me get out with the music. All right, you got to listen to what I tell you. I learned to be in the brain. I ain't going to tell you nothing wrong. Everything I learned, you my brother. I'm going to tell you if you're going to do this. It's going to become a job. So you got to prepare for it. So, you know, when you don't listen. I just go my way.
And that's real talk too, man, because one thing about it is you're not listening to you, you're not the reality is, you know, you are real with it. And that's something that some artists expect it to be, you know, we're not saying this about anyone in particular, but we know some artists have their egos, and in terms of that,
right,
they want a situation where, oh, well, when you come around them, you got to bow down and do what they're going to say. And it's like, no, motherfucker, you hired me for a job. That's what this is. I'm like,
right.
especially if I've already got the money. So there's already been a contract drawn up. I've already been paid. I'm going to render my services to you because of that. But if we got an issue where you start adding up, just remember, I've already got my money. So how are we going to do this?
Right. And see, and it's crazy you said it, because 2015, you know, I kind of fell back from the industry to learn the business. Like,
right.
I was, like, when I met Pee Wee in 2013, I was fresh. Young cat, oh, he hot. I don't know nothing. I don't know. I was supposed to have beats registered, copywritten, this and that, BMI. I ain't know none of that. I just know how to make a beat. Hey, I'm fine. What's happening? Hop out the porch. Oh, he lit. Until I seen an artist that I produce for, you know, the quarter rolled around for them royalties. Now, the
mm-hmm.
artist that got paid about 15 racks, 15,000. I'm like, whoa. I hear what he get paid for. It's for the last project from 3 months. Oh, man. Hold on. Don't I supposed to have some money? Now I'm licking boo-boo face because I didn't know the business. This
right.
was 2014. So, you know, I'm
right.
like, damn. Wasn't nobody explaining to me. None of the major artists, I'm with them every day, but ain't nobody telling me, hey, you got to handle the business. You need to talk to such and going to get you right. You ain't going to get yourself situated. Ain't nobody talking. Ain't nobody letting me know that. And I'm graduating school, but ain't nobody telling me about this part of the business I need to be learning. So I
right,
fell back.
Right.
You know, I kind of went under the radar. I was in Atlanta. I was still accepting my bookings and everything as far as producing and engineering and mixing. But I learned the business. I contacted a couple of entertainment lawyers. And, you know, I had to get my mind right. And now I feel like I'm ready. I can help brand somebody else now. Now that I know what it takes to brand myself on my road and my journey to success, whoever I can help, I got you. You know, it didn't come. Some of it didn't come free for me, but I made it to where I can pick it up and learn it without having to skin down for it. You know, what I mean by free
yeah, right.
or skin down, yeah. they're not going to give you the game.
Right.
Unless they see you sincere about what you're doing. If you're not sincere about it, ain't nobody going to care because you got this arrogant attitude and you feel like whatever you put out is going to go, da da da. You feel like because you got money, it's this, that, da da. No, it don't work like that. You don't know the business, your money don't mean nothing.
You
I had to learn
real,
that.
Man. That's real.
It's something
because,
to have, like, it's something to have a $5 million selling record, but yet don't have $5.
Exactly. I'm like, that's crazy.
Look at what
so
happened
that's
with
you. That's why I'm not signed to nobody. I own my own label. I don't call it a record label because I don't have $1 million to sign no artist. I'm not even going to lie to you. But what I can offer you is good artist development, good engineering, good production, good vibes, positive vibes, good knowledge on the business that you might not know. You know what I mean? Good pointers and free game. I got all that to offer you. A good relationship. You know?
And the reality is, man, some things are more important than money. Because the thing is, you're more of a cultivating consultation industry that happens to make dope-ass music as well. Because you're giving people an understanding of what they're supposed to do. And, you know, it's great because in terms of you owning your own enterprise like that, you're 1,000% in control of your own shit. And that's one thing. It's like what, you know, King and myself do with this show. We're independent. And one thing we love about this is that we can get whoever we want on the show. There's nobody telling us this person is big enough or whatever. It's like, no, we get whoever we feel like. And that's the motto of our
right.
show. No guest too big,
right.
no guest too small. We get whoever we want to get.
Okay, we're
right.
We rocking with you, man.
I appreciate it, man. I'm rocking with y'all. I appreciate y'all for having me.
Definitely, man. So, you know, we probably about to go on the hours, too, and I know you got to go back to the studio and handle some beds, man. So tell anybody that's following us, that's following the show, where to find you on social media handles and where to find your project.
You can find me on all social media at YDGGONFIX. That's FIXIT. That's YDGGONFIX it all together. That's on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I'm on PlayStation. I like Call of Duty, so you know it's the same. YDGGONFIX it if you want to play with me. I'm not Hollywood. Like, I be with stars, I've been around stars, but I never set myself to act like one. You know, you gotta you gotta move a certain way in the industry, but I don't. I'm not Hollywood. I talk. I interact with my people. If they love, my music, they rock with me. I'm gonna interact with you. I'm gonna talk back to you. You know what I mean? I'm not gonna treat you like you're a nobody or something like that, because I don't believe in it. Everybody is somebody. It's just up to that somebody to make it known.
Hey, brother. Listen, we appreciate you so much, man. Thank you.
No problem. Anytime, man. Anytime. I'm rocking with y'all. I appreciate y'all for having me once again. It's been real.
It's been real, man. We
appreciate
you getting
down,
so
bro.
Thank you again. Yeah. All righty. So I guess we got hour one out of the way. So like you said, King, we on hour two. So I mean,
yes, sir.
Through and through.
Yes, sir. We waiting on our guests to call in. But in the meantime, there's a lot of good things going on in hip hop right now, man. They got Stygon and Votto. They about to battle next month.
Oh shit.
And you know they build the anticipation. They've been talking trash. You know, not trash as in being very disrespectful, but they've been kind of doing it back and forth on IG. It's been pretty funny. And I'm interested to see how this is going to go down, because it's crazy. He never really built himself to be a battle rapper. So he's jumping in the ring, first time ever.
Mm-hmm.
And Votto, it's kind of hard to see how this match is going. Votto seemed more like a smooth type, hustler type rapper.
Well, I'll put it like this. My son is a great dude, but I'm going to give the edge to Votto just because I've met Votto before. You know, great guy, super nice guy, you know, and he's just a real nice dude. And I met him back in 2009, really good dude. So I'm rocking with Votto. I even got his album, you know, Slime Flu. For those that ain't heard it, banging ass album, especially the joint, Speaking in Tongues, you know, great track. If y'all haven't checked out the UN abbreviation for Us Now, you know, the joint album he did with Cam'ron, that joint is dope. You know, so, you know, it's called Guns and Butter. Yeah, I rock with Votto, man. But it's great, King, for the culture, because like we always talk about, you know, the verses is for old fans of the music, and it's for gaining new fans. So you got a lot of people that get to hear music from them that may not have ever heard them before. You know, so these people get to get familiar with their product, and that's a beautiful thing.
Curious to see how this battle gonna take place. I mean, it's not a versus battle for those who listen. It's a straight up battle. We talk bars.
So lyrically, they're gonna go at each other. Oh, okay, that battle.
It's not a versus.
Okay.
It's a battle rap.
Okay, they battle. they about to hit it with the bar.
About to go at it, man. It's a different chamber right here.
Yeah, I mean, we'll just see how it is with both of them.
Yeah, I mean, I can see they were just playing songs because Stygon has a more range. But when it comes to battles, Stygon never stepped into the battle realm before. So we'll see how this goes.
Okay, and I said Mike's on, so that's the editor's mistake. But, yeah, but Stygon, when you look at Stygon in terms of his history, in terms of what he's done over the years, Stygon is one of the most respected guys out there. You know, his album, Greatest Story Never Told, took long enough for it to come out. You know, for those that know the story behind it, you know, it took long enough to come out with all the label delays and everything. But Stygon is gifted, you know, and to really see those two, you know, go at it. I mean, to see Stygon, you know, or to see Brian, you know, because that's his real name, to see him move not only from hip-hop to do television in terms of acting on Entourage, he's come a long way, you know, and that's dope to see him, you know, progress
But also, too, with this, this gives everybody a chance to see him go back to his roots of hip-hop and see, you know, what he's got in terms of, like, really throwing down with the bars, you know?
Yeah, man, I definitely love to see battle, actual battle. I want to see what's going to be on the card anyway. I'm trying to look at it right now.
So they got an undercard as well for the main event?
Oh, yeah. You know, you got to sell the hype.
That's true.
It also depends on where they're battling, too. I don't want to see them dudes battling somewhere like Alabama. They got to go to the jungles of battle rap like Philly or Queens.
New York.
Man, it gets real grimy.
I mean, they can make the upscale affair, you know, go to Miami or somewhere, you know. But both of them are East Coast artists, born and bred, you know. So you got to see them both, really. You know, logically, it has to be New York because they're both New Yorkers. So, I mean, that's just a given right there. You got to put them there. But it's dope for the culture, you know, and it shows everybody in terms of it. That it's about at the end of the day the music, and it's about really putting your skill to the test in terms of what you got, you know. And there's, at the end of the day, that's what it's about, you know, letting your ability speak for itself.
Major facts. Now it's going to be Charlie Clips versus 1P.
Okay.
K Slay going to be behind the music with DJ Scream.
I tell you one
versus Big T. It's gonna be all right.
I tell you one thing with that kid 1P. 1P is nice. For those that ain't heard 1P, that dude is nice. You know, and that's one of K Slay's co-signs. You know, he made the cover of Straight Stuntin' magazine some years ago. I have that issue. Shout out to DJ K Slay, Harlem, born and raised, the drama king. You know, I mean, if Slay's behind this, you know it ain't going to be no bullshit. It's going to be dope.
Facts, man. And other big news in hip-hop. I'm pretty sure everybody heard this get down between Karen Civil and Joyner Lucas. Now, let me tell you this, man. It's one thing to allegedly take $6 from a nigga. $60. $600 is pushing it. But you take a nigga from 60 G's, we coming, we giving, the building gonna be surrounded. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, brother, give our audience perspective on what this whole situation is really about in terms of how it came to this.
Yeah, I definitely will. Hang on, let me go ahead and read the article for y'all right quick. Because
okay.
With social media, things follow so quick, you get eventually caught up. So here's
right.
The article right here.
Mm-hmm.
All right, quick, y'all. Let me get that. It said, the independent MC, Joyner Lucas, launched a series of tweets on Saturday, September 18th, claiming he hired the Live Civil CEO for $60,000. Prior to 2014, long before he released his breakout singles, I'm Not a Racist, and Will Remix, and Ross Cabarachi, the biographical track that made Will Smith come out of retirement last year. And he said in the tweet, my son was on the way, and you stole $60,000 from me before I got in the game, Karen Civil, Joyner tweeted. Attached a business PDF to his accusation, I hire you as a consultant, and below attached was the memo you sent me. I was desperate for help, and you knew that. After you was paid, you went ghost and didn't expect me to pop. Here I am. After you got your money paid up front, you stopped answering my call, and every time I hit you, you answered the phone with attitude like I was messing up your day. I sent you hella messages pleading with you to do your job because my back was against the wall. You took advantage. Then he also dug up some old text messages exchanged between the two and accused her of having media leverage. Karen Civil released a statement to the Shade Room explaining her version of events. She said, it's easy to make broad statements with who aren't familiar with the back end of business, she stated. Subcontractors are paid, including Ravelo Agency, PR, local reps, all party contracted on your behalf to execute what plan for the budget alluded. His manager called me to rectify the situation after Joyner made his first claims, in which I said we could happily discuss after a public apology was being made, since he used the same platform to lie about money taken from him. I recorded the call for future circumstances like this. It's getting ugly. It's getting very ugly.
Well, I mean, let's go ahead and start from what we do know in terms of what was said about it. The reality is this. I'm not going to say, you know, who's lying and who's telling the truth. I will say Joyner does have a compelling case, especially if he has paperwork in terms of speaking on the fact of what the arrangement was supposed to be. You know, King, you and me have been doing this for a while, all of us, Sandman, Chinchilla, all together, we've done this 7 years, and we have talked about this on the show with many a guest. We've had discussions about this many a time about how you have to make sure that the business aspect of things are right and who you are entrusting. But if Joyner, in actuality, did give her that money and she burned him on it, he has a right to air her out on it. You know, because the reality is, you don't make claims like that without something behind it. That's just reckless. That's irresponsible. That's impugning somebody's reputation, professionally and personally. So this is a situation that if she really did do that to him, he has a right to say something. Now, she has paperwork or whatever to dispute it, but this is what I'm kind of confused on, bro. Is this a situation where she's trying to say that in terms of subcontracting that this was supposed to be worked out through a third party in terms of she was not directly responsible for it? Because from what Joyner's saying, he paid her directly for her to handle this, and she didn't.
Right. That's what it looked like to me. She's trying to basically dissociate herself from the responsibility.
But I think
personally, we've seen this type of practice happen many times in this business.
Right.
Cameron called her out. A lot of people call this woman out for you know, shady business practices. And, you know, she's trying to use Nipsey Hussle's reputation because, you know, she got put on through Nipsey.
Mm-hmm.
So she's trying to use Nip as a clutch to really get the heat off her. Like, she's legitimate like that. But, you know, there's an old saying, the quack like a duck is a damn duck. And too many people have been calling her out for a minute.
Right. Yeah, and that's something that if it's really a situation of what is going on with this, this is serious because, you know, when you have all these people coming out, this ain't a witch hunt. This is called... you actually doing something you shouldn't be doing. Witch hunts happen when it's unjustified and there's a political agenda behind it or a personal agenda. This is simply the fact that we're all indications that she has done some things that were not correct. And now apparently, because, you know, it's funny, man.
Yeah, Cameron said the same thing. He said Cameron explained that the accusation that she robbed his friend of money was dismissed. And she just lost a court case to another female. Now they're saying Cameron is foul. When I said it, I was hating. He continued, adding that Joyner Lucas was allegedly robbed of the same amount as Duke the Guard.
Ooh. Mm. That's serious. That is serious.
And said, during the tirade on Twitter, Joyner Lucas claimed that he is feared of being blackballed if he had initially spoke out against Civil. However, it wasn't until Cameron called her out that he also felt comfortable to go public with his claims. He said, at the time, I was afraid to speak up for myself because I didn't want to get blackballed, he wrote. I had no idea how this industry stuff works, and I didn't want you to drag my name through the mud, so out of fear, I stayed quiet until Mr. Cameron spoke up, and that's when I did.
And, He was right to be apprehensive. Cameron, I've had him before. Good guy, really good guy. He's about his business.
And, you know, Cam's a veteran in the game. You know, he knows the business in terms of how it works. You know, no matter what nobody says, you know, Cameron Giles knows how this thing goes. And Cam has credibility in the industry. So he was able to, if Cam can speak up on it, Cam knows it because he's got the cachet to do it. Because he's a veteran. Joyner, you know, we've seen this game over the years. In terms of a lot of artists, we're not going to name any executive names. We don't do that on this show to put anybody out there. But we know how this business works. It's a very clannish, it's a very paternally driven, it's a nepotism business. And when you start talking bad about certain people, you are risking your professional bread and butter. You step on the wrong toes, you know, that's it. You know, I mean, we've seen artists basically, once they kind of did or said something they shouldn't have, we never heard from them.
It's kind of like, you know what, though, it's like, that gives me a different outlook on how the snowball effect happens when it comes to powerful people being accused of things. It could be like sexual assault. It could be like thievery. It could be robbing somebody. And these people hold weight, so a lot of people be like, man, I can't go against that giant. He could crush my whole career.
Think about what happened with Weinstein, with Harvey Weinstein, when all those actresses were, you know, sexually assaulted by him. You know, Weinstein, you know, held heavy weight in Hollywood. I mean, this was like, you know, when you look at Weinstein's history in film in terms of his company, the Weinstein Company, like since the 70s, he was like considered like one of the five top power brokers in Hollywood. Like, he could, you know, if you're in good with Weinstein, he would green light your shit.
You ain't going
in a good way. Yeah, he would not, I mean, in a good way. Like, if you were down with him, he would green light you, meaning that you would actually, like, you could, if you had a production or a movie you were trying to get on, he would help get it off. Because if you were with him, like, he was one of those people, he green lights you in a bad way. If you cross him, like you said, you're not going to eat, you know. You know, he will put it out there that you, you know, don't work with this person. I mean, he was a power broker. But, you know, the reality is he did what he did, and it went on like 30, 40 years. And he was molesting, you know, assaulting, even supposedly raping these women out here. And look what happened, and they caught up with him. And he went to trial, and he was convicted for it. But, when you get into the entertainment industry, we talk a lot on this show about it. There's a lot of things that go on behind closed doors that you and me don't know, that a lot of people don't know. We talk to people off the air. We've heard stories on the air about some of these things in terms of how some of these people operate, and it's not pretty, you know. But once it gets put out there publicly in a broad forum, it becomes something that becomes a story. It becomes confirmation of what people's suspicions were. It becomes fodder for the tabloids. Ultimately, there become questions, you know, and that's why, you know, some people, they're just not going to be willing to accept that risk of what may happen to them. And that's understandable because you work hard to get into the game of entertainment. And when you get in a situation where it could be snatched away from you, the question is, are you going to sit down and just take it, or are you going to speak up and take what comes? And I've been through that myself, you know, dealing with an establishment that was powerful. And it's like, are you going to sit down and take it or speak up? And I chose to speak up. I paid for it, but on principle, I'm glad I did what I did because I was, you know, I was wrong, you know. But you got to stand for something. That's all it is.
Hey, you know what, man? I'm going to go ahead and we're going to take a brief music break here. I want to play this song here because it speaks volumes of what this topic is on right now. And you know I got to go with the classics right here. One of my favorite tracks, Industry Shakedown by Freddie Fox.
Yeah, the classic. Yeah.
Produced by Pete Rock. Now, I'm going to tell you, this is one of the hardest diss records of the industry I've heard, because he named names up in this. He didn't get Sublimo. He didn't beef it out. He named names of powerful people like that.
Classic song from a classic album. Yes, I have it on vinyl.
So let's go to it.
Let's get it.
Yeah. I call this one the industry shakedown.
Word up. Uh-huh.
Now the reason I call it the industry shakedown is because a lot of niggas have fucked up.
Word up.
And what I mean by fucked up is they don't want to see the game played right.
Word up.
So me and my nigga Pete Rock gonna show y'all how to play the game right. Feel me? I can't stop rocking. I was born to keep it hot. Fought through miles of pain just to get what I got without crying. Took mad shots without dying. Man, they know when I'm in town, mad heads start flying. Whoever thought that I would be dealt a hand that would make me the most feared lyrical man. Ass tone, how it feel not to be able to sleep. I was laying on them in his dream, squeezing on the heat. I kept the pressure on him. Now I'm universal. Now we play this money game called hand reversal. I remember when I thought that I could rock at Def Jam. Well, I was watching other niggas caught up in a death scam. I remember when I stepped to Lior, I should have blown him, cause that crack have been a crook ever since I first known him. Thought I sailed to Atlantic, but there's niggas working for him that'll sink the whole label like the fucking Titanic. What I gotta do is run some dick up in Sylvia Rhone so she can hear Bumpy rocking on this microphone. Maybe I can electrify her brain, show her how I take love and turn it to pain. I never been an ass kisser, I call it if it's right. If rappers ain't gay or dykes, then they unplugging your mic. My shit is cordless, I'm thugged out in wild as shit, and I'm coming for my crown. It's Bumpy Knuckles, baby, and it's the industry shakedown.
Word up.
Ha.
Word up. Ready for the industry shakedown.
Yeah.
Word up. Word up.
That's right, nigga. Me and my nigga Pete Rock gonna show you motherfuckers how to shake it down. You ready for this one? Check it out. Feel me? When I spit hot potato, I was peeping Tommy Boy, but didn't wanna be the next act that they would destroy. See, labels be all on your dick when they see you at some paper, but I flipped the game, cause I pulled the capers. Got way more nuts than date rapers. You better be trying to get yourself an office way on top of that skyscraper. I bring the ruckus, your money looking proper. Have you ever been stuck up by a hardcore hip hopper? Forgot you signed a copper, a real Donnie Brasco, a nigga with mics and tape recorders all up in his asshole. Speaking of police, I found an Interscope, and when I looked through the hole, what I saw was dope. I saw a new nigga sitting behind a big desk with a big head and a big chest and a big belly, talking on a celly, hating real players, cutting niggas' throats like he was trying to be the mayor. Then some niggas rushed in, punched him in his mouth, threw him down on the floor and started stomping him out, screaming, fuck Steve Stout. Serve street justice, crying on the floor with your lip all busted. You went out like a pussy, fuck the dough you got, cause with all that money, nigga, you still can't buy a heart. Only gangsters play the part. I'm still around to bring you the industry shakes down. A to the Pete Rock and you don't stop. A to the Pete Rock and you don't stop. My nigga Pete Rock and you don't stop. I never felt like I should have to hold back anything I say, so I make the kind of records Red Alert don't play, because I flow too hard. My voice is penetrating, or maybe a crate needs renovating. I'm used to hating, that's why I'm hockey on you niggas, sticking and skating. I heard about the Blaze battle, they asked me to be in it, but did not consider me one of the 50 great. So I reviewed my tapes, figured my position, sat and thought for a minute, grabbed the phone and said, listen, I sell less records than some niggas out with a deal, but we make more cash and all my diamonds is real. And you want me to battle for a rollie that I'ma take anyway? Better leave me the fuck alone, Bumpy Nux don't play. It made me laugh when I think about how Gary Harris tried to play me, then got fired and all fucking embarrassed. Fly shit is that he saw me with a smile at a club, reached to shake my fucking hand and draw back a nub. All them temporary spots to be filled time again. You can hate me now, but I will rhyme again. Fall down, climb again. More wild, more corrupt, still spitting more shit, more foul, more abrupt. And I'll never put my two guns down.
Word up,
cause I need them for the industry shakedown.
Word up. Word up.
That's right. That's what the fuck I call an industry shakedown. And there's a lot of motherfuckers out there that I didn't name in this motherfucking song, but I'll tell you this much. Don't think I forgot, motherfucker, cause I reserve my options. It's Bumpy Knuckles, baby.
you niggas are fast waves.
Woo, woo, woo.
One of the hardest diss records I ever heard.
Man. Bumpy Nuts is no joke. I'd be to the battle for a Roly that I'm going to take anyway.
So the Steve Stout diss, right?
No, I didn't know that was him. I didn't know that was about him.
Yeah, he said a nigga on the cell phone with a big belly.
Hey, guess what? Steve Stout ain't going to say nothing back to him.
Heck no. He don't want that type of smoke.
No. No, Bumpy, I've heard it on certified authority in terms of Bumpy, like, you know, because, you know, Bumpy is older now, you know, he's in his 50s, you know, but going back some years in the game, you know, Bumpy, you know, was known as a bruiser out in the streets, you know what I'm saying? He was a dude that,
yeah. He saw the niggas in the last verse, man. He said, I saw a nigga sitting behind a big desk with a big head and a big chest and a big belly talking on the celly, hating real players, cutting niggas' throats. Like he was trying to be a man. Then some niggas rushed there and punched him in his mouth, threw him down the floor and started stomping him out, screaming, F. Steve Stout.
I mean, look, you know, one thing about a veteran like Bumpy is that he's been out there, so he has seen the industry from an end of what goes on. You know, that's why that was called Industry Shakedown, because it's about talking about the politics of the game. What goes on, how things are not always, you know, correct in it. You know, if there's a dude that is always championing the underground of it, it's that guy.
You're not going to get records like that.
No. Candy corn is disgusting. The same can be true. Yeah, that guy sucks.
But
candy corn is terrible.
But somebody had to say it, and it's him. You know, but I think that album though really resonates, because we don't really know. You know, we do this show, we talk to a lot of industry people, but like I said earlier, we don't always know what goes on behind those doors in terms of how these deals are done.
My question to you would be this though. Which one of these cats was stepped to Bumpy like that, though? Who was stepped to him?
No, and then nobody. None and nobody. That's what it is. None and nobody. You know, the industry, as we've learned over the years, man, is predicated a lot on it cultivating an image. Some of those images, some of those reputations are authentic, and then some of them, they aren't. When you're dealing with a guy like Bumpy, you say his name on a track dissing him, you better be prepared to see him. And that conversation is not going to be a peaceful conversation. You know, he gave a pass to Nori some years ago when Nori got drunk and said he was going to do something to him, and Bumpy kind of just, he addressed it to Nori, but he was like, you know, but he knew Nori didn't really mean it. He was like, he just got drunk. But, you know, Nori got a pass. You come at Bumpy Knuckles, it's very few and far between. He's going to let that go if you disrespect him on the microphone. That ain't going to happen. He ain't going to let that go. You may not like what he said, and guess what? Bumpy is not that dude to clout chase to say things because he doesn't, you know, just because. He ain't a capper. He's not a fraud. You know, Bumpy says something on the wax, it's true. And he dares you to, you know, basically come at him and, you know, challenge him on it. You know, but that's just who he is.
Right. Now, you know, I'm about to sign this off a little early tonight, man. I got to take care of something real fast. But we want to send our condolences and rest in peace to A.J. Johnson, who passed away yesterday, man.
Yeah, man. We can't forget Melvin Van Peebles either. You know, we've lost two icons.
He passed away.
Yeah, he died yesterday, I believe. 89 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, rest it. Yeah, man. That's it. And AJ Johnson, you know, to see the situation with his wife going on, talking about how people were, you know, the fake love and everything. We got to give a shout out to Michael Blackson. And shout out to all y'all fans of AJ Johnson out there who contributed to that GoFundMe to get, you know, that $10,000, you know, to help towards his burial. And Michael Blackson, he matched it, you know, from his pocket. So shout out to y'all out there who contributed. God bless you all. And shout out to Michael Blackson for being a real one, you know, for donating it. The African King of Comedy, you know, AJ was special to all of us. You know, and, you know, it's just, this is why we do what we do. This is why we cherish our legends while they're here, you know, because he was a legend. You know your black movies. He was a legend. You know, some of the funniest films in black cinema history he was part of, and he's going to be missed.
I got the hook up Friday, Players Club.
Can't forget House Party 3. Yeah.
House Party 1, where he was the one that Robert Harris was cracking on with the Jerry Curl.
Yeah. You know, but he meant a lot, man. He's going to be missed. You know, he's an icon in the game in terms of maybe not necessarily achieving that super fame, but if you saw him, you knew who he was, you knew how funny he was in film. So that is a loss for the culture, man. You know, you figure, and it's really hard for Friday because you know in terms of Friday, over the past 15 years, 8 of those original cast members are gone now. Helen Martin, Bernie Mac, you know, A.J. Johnson, you know, Tiny Lister, you know, to just name a few. You know, we've lost like 8 of them from that movie. The Mexican dude, he passed away. You know, so yeah.
The Mexican dude?
Yeah, the Mexican dude in Friday, the one that gave Smokey that bad weed.
When he passed away?
He passed away some years ago. He died some years ago. I want to say he may have committed suicide. Let me double check.
That was on Roach.
Yeah, Roach.
Yeah, that was Roach from Next Friday.
But
went ahead and did that movie right then and there, man.
Yeah, it was. His name was Jaime Fernandez Reyes. You know, he was in Friday. You know, he was in Friday. He passed away in 2005.
Damn, that's wild, man. But may he rest in peace, man. Another legend gone, but we definitely gonna salute him for the laughs that he gave us and keep his memory alive.
Definitely, most definitely.
But, yeah, man, unfortunately our guests couldn't make it tonight, but we definitely going to set that up for the reschedule. So that's nothing to us. That happens. That's a part of the business. You know what I'm saying? You know, sometimes phones go out. Sometimes personal things happen. Because he hit me up at 8:20, said it's a go, and, you know, things didn't transpire, so, you know, I'm going to hit him up and see if he's okay.
Definitely. But we're going to keep moving. You know what it is. You know, so, hey, it's on to the next, we get it on the next. So, on that note, you know what I'm saying, I guess we sign out and we get ready to do it for next week.
Definitely. We still got some lined up for tomorrow anyway, so we all right.
Okay.
So
we good. Yeah, we're
gonna get better.
Yep.